The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright, the power to create a happier, healthier life drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected, a place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California, and wow, have we got a great show for you tonight. It's featuring Dr. Joe Dispenza from the movie What the Bleep Do We Know. Dr. Joe has a brand new book out, which is fabulous, called You Are the Placebo, Making Your Mind Matter. He's absolutely brilliant with this book, and you are just going to love, love, love this show. That and a few more other things as well, so sit back, relax, and let's get ready to learn about the power of the mind with Dr. Joe Dispenza. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Law of Attraction Radio Network, enhancing the well-being of millions of listeners worldwide. LOARadionetwork.com is heard through 25 different internet radio stations, as well as iTunes Radio, Stitcher.com, and our mobile apps. The Law of Attraction Radio Network, your trusted source of daily inspiration at LOARadionetwork.com.
Are you ready to be activated to draw money to you? Hi, I'm Jules, and I created the Triple Powered Money Activation app featuring a powerful LOA hypnosis session with high-frequency sounds from Code Dimensions that was fully energized by energy transformer Eric Altman. That's why I call it the Triple Powered Money Activation. I've been getting amazing reports on the effectiveness of this state-of-the-art app. Best part is the app is only $9.99, and you can find it on iTunes and Google Play to download into your smartphone. Just put in Money Activation in the App Store search and look for our green Triple Powered Money Activation app. Use it every night as you fall asleep. Get yours today and start manifesting money tomorrow. Okay, we are back with Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. Well, I get to talk about Santa Barbara now, in September 2014. Are you ready to see Jack Canfield in person for a three-hour workshop? Here's the topic, the success principles, how to get from where you are to where you want to be. I love it. Yes, I can already see Jack on this stage giving us the inside scoop on how to find our personal success. And guess what? We have got Dr. David Che of the phenomenal book, Total Law of Attraction, speaking as well. That's right. He's going to be on stage too. So how can you miss this? This is going to be so incredible. This is the epitome of what the Law of Attraction is about, and these guys can deliver it to you so simply, so easily, and it's so wonderful because we can learn this in paradise, which is where we should be learning it. So just remember September 26th, 27th, and 28th in Santa Barbara, California. This is one event you're not going to want to miss. Now, before we bring out Dr. Joe Dispenza, let's talk about how to remove some limiting thoughts. In order to remove limiting thoughts, we've got to utilize the same method that we used when we acquired them. And of course, it's all about choice. To remove them, we've also got to use choice. You just choose to remove them. Now, this may sound too simple, but you know what? That's how it works. There are a whole bunch of copyrighted techniques that detail processes for removing unwanted thought forms, but the basic element of removal is the aspect of choice and how bad you want to rid yourself of those limiting thoughts. The actual removal step is quite simple, but the challenge for most people is getting to the point mentally where you want to let go of them. Can you imagine fire walking by yourself if you read a book that told you all you had to do was concentrate on the belief that you were walking on wet, moist, velvety grass? I don't think you would want to take off your shoes until you had some coaching. The techniques for removing limiting thoughts are of the same nature. Confidence must be built with smaller experiences of success before most people will believe that they can do it. We all have existing beliefs about what can and cannot be done. They must be dealt with first. Also, when you remove a limiting thought form, it's a good idea to replace it with an empowering one. Here's a simple example. Let's say you uncovered a limiting belief, nothing ever works for me. First, put your full concentration on that belief and then say to yourself slowly and deliberately, either mentally or verbally, I have the belief that nothing works for me. And I'm going to choose to remove that from my belief system because it truly limits me. And you know what? That's all it takes. To replace it, just choose a new one. I choose to replace it with everything that I do works out for my best interest. Everything that I do works out for my best interest. Now, how does that feel against the thought that nothing ever works out for me versus everything I do works out for the best? It feels better. And it's your choice. How do you want to feel? Do you want to feel sad or miserable or limited? Or do you want to feel, wow, life is really working for me? The choice is always yours. Let's say you want to remove the limiting belief, nobody cares about what I have to say. As you begin, you have the thought, I'm not sure I know how to do this right. That now becomes the limiting belief that you work with. Start with, I have a belief, I am not sure on how to do this right, and I choose to remove it from my belief system because it limits me. Then you have the thought, I'm not sure that worked. Do the same thing. I have a belief that I'm not sure that it worked, and I choose to remove it from my belief system because it limits me. Then go about the original limiting belief. Nobody cares about what I have to say. If another doubt shows up before you remove the original limiting thought, treat it the same way. Remove it. Initially, don't be surprised if a number of these pesky doubts show up. Just cheer yourself that you found another one and remove it. Keep going. It will get easier and easier. Remember, the way that you think is by your choice. It is your choice to monitor it and to change it. You can do it. Now let's talk to a wonderful chiropractor who now travels the world helping people to adjust their minds so that their minds will heal themselves. Let's welcome the phenomenal Dr. Joe Dispenza. Welcome, Dr. Joe, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, I'm very happy to be with you, Joe.
Let's talk about your really, really wonderful book. And it's all about You Are the Placebo. So in the past, we've often heard of the placebo effect. Like if we believe an apple a day will keep the doctor away, it will. But you are suggesting something much more powerful in your book, that we are actually the placebo. So how in the world can we be the placebo?
Well, let's think about this. I mean, if you give someone a sugar pill, a saline injection, or you perform some fake procedure or sham surgery, a certain percentage of those people who receive an inert substance or a false procedure will actually accept, believe, and surrender to that condition without any analysis, and they'll actually get better by taking something outside of them or receiving some external substance that mimics the exact drug. So how does that occur? If you're giving someone something that isn't really real, it's then the thought that they're getting better that actually creates the physiological change in their brain and body. So the question is, if you understand the mechanics and the scientific principles of how the placebo works, instead of the person believing in something outside of them, could they believe in the innate powers within them? And could they begin to produce the same effects by trusting their belief in themselves and the belief in possibility than in some external substance? Because it really is the thought that's actually healing them.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that just wonderful? So, in fact, it's not really the chemo that is healing. It is actually our own beliefs and our thoughts that is creating that perhaps instant remission.
I think that there may be some element in which the chemo may actually work. I'm not disregarding that. But what I'm saying is that the people who aren't getting the chemo and told they're given the chemo, and those people who are getting better, it's actually the inert substance isn't doing the healing. Their body is making their own pharmacy of chemicals that's actually matching the exact chemical they think they're taking. So then we have our own pharmacy within us, and if we learn how to execute the proper principles and tools of how the placebo works, then we can begin to get well faster and better.
And that works just not on health, but in every area of our life.
Absolutely. We've seen it. Well, it's the same principle, and it works with creating a life that you want. It also is an element of creating the health that you'd like to experience.
This is so exciting. So our thoughts are the placebo.
Our thought is one of the key ingredients of the placebo. It's actually, if you think about how the placebo works, one element of how the placebo works is if you give someone something that's inert, what they're really doing from a mindful standpoint is that they're beginning to select the potential that exists in the quantum field called health, or a vision or an idea of being well. And if they begin to experience an elevated emotion of enthusiasm or joy or excitement, when you combine a clear intention with an elevated emotion, you begin to change a person's physiology, because it's that emotional quotient then that comes along with the thought that begins to reprogram the autonomic nervous system, and it's the autonomic nervous system that actually does the healing. So the person, say, with Parkinson's disease, or the person with chronic pain, or the person with depression, has not been able to change their state by saying, okay, I'm going to make more serotonin in my brain, or I'm going to produce my own particular anti-inflammatories to reduce my pain levels, or I'm going to produce my own dopamine levels. They can't voluntarily or consciously do it. But in the placebo response, when you see a person's pain levels diminish significantly, or someone with depression all of a sudden not only have changes in their mind, but when they do scans of their brain, there's changes in their brain. It's not just in their mind, it's in their brain. And they're making extra serotonin and executing different functions in different parts of the brain, or producing their own anti-inflammatories, then it's the autonomic nervous system that does that, because they can't consciously do it. So then the question is, how do we begin to get into that system? Because once we're in that system, we can drop a seed in possibility.
You're right. Now, I'm a hypnotherapist, so I always, with people who come to me with depression, I always suggest that they are naturally making and producing the perfect amount of serotonin to keep them in a happy mode. This seems to work.
Sure. I mean, let's talk about just the placebo response with depression. I mean, it's a scientific fact right now that 3 out of 4 people that are given a placebo and told they're giving an antidepressant, 3 out of those 4 people actually respond as if they were given the real antidepressant. So how does that work? I mean, even in certain cases, there have been people who have sworn that they actually received the proper medication, and they went to their doctor and said, no, you must have this wrong. I took the real medication. I didn't take the placebo. And so they're producing very significant changes because the pill that they're taking every day, Jules, is a reminder to them about a possibility of health.
Wow.
And so the placebo becomes a daily reminder of their health. So if you don't believe in the pill then, and you say, okay, if I marry a clear intention with an elevated emotion, intention is a thoughtful process, and an elevated emotion is a bodily process. In other words, thoughts are the language of the brain and feelings are the language of the body, and how you think and how you feel creates a state of being, then can you create a state of being every single day by just doing it without any external substance and be able to take that placebo every day by changing your state of being? The answer is absolutely yes, because if you keep regulating those states on a daily basis, just like the placebo, the autonomic nervous system begins to alter bodily functions.
Wow. So we have to use some techniques to actually train our brain to produce this. Is that correct?
In a way, yes. I mean, the techniques that we use in the workshops, and that's in the new book, You Are the Placebo, The techniques that we use, we primarily use the meditation model. Now, not in the traditional sense of sitting there and focusing on nothing or stilling your mind, but really teaching people how to alter their physiological functions by getting beyond their analytical mind. Now, why is it important to get beyond the analytical mind? Well, if you're a hypnotherapist, you know this better than anybody.
Yeah. What
separates the conscious mind from the subconscious mind is the analytical mind. And if you're highly analytical, then you're less suggestible. In other words, the more analytical you are, the less open you are to thoughtful suggestions. The less analytical you are, the more suggestible you are to possibilities. So the purpose of meditation is to get beyond the analytical mind. And when you get beyond the analytical mind and you change your brainwave patterns, now you're entering into the programming system, the operating system, where true change can take place. So part of the skill is being able to change your internal states and regulate your brainwaves. And when you do that, you're more suggestible to the thoughts that you're thinking. Now, this is also an interesting concept because in the research that we've done, for the most part, people are only suggestible to the thoughts that they think that are equal to the emotional state that they're in. A person who's feeling depression or a person who's feeling unworthy will only accept, believe, and surrender to the thoughts equal to that emotional state. They'll believe in the thoughts of that are driven by the emotion of depression or unworthiness, because it's those emotional states that activate certain circuits neurologically in the brain, which then produces more emotions to feel depressed or unworthy, which then creates more thoughts, and we get caught in these loops. By the same means, if a person is in a state of gratitude, if a person is in a state of inspiration, they're more prone to accept the thoughts equal to those emotional states. And the antithesis is also true. A person who's depressed cannot accept the thoughts of abundance, cannot accept the thoughts of possibility, because those thoughts aren't equal to the emotional state. So teaching people how to begin to open their heart and begin to teach them how to change their emotional states then allows them to capture streams of consciousness or create future visions that are equal to that emotional state. And the word meditation literally means to become familiar with. So as we begin to practice this every single day, we fire and wire the networks of neurons that create a new level of mind. And if you're able to reproduce that same level of mind every day, it'll begin to become familiar to you. And if you're able to cultivate the emotional state of joy or inspiration or gratitude before the event has occurred, then you're more prone to condition your body to begin to believe that that future reality is happening to you in the present moment, and your body is the unconscious mind, will begin to believe it's in that future reality, and you'll begin to signal new genes in new ways. Now, the key then is that elevated emotion then becomes the catalyst. So most people will wait for their, you know, their wealth to show up to feel abundant, or their healing to occur to feel wholeness and vitality, or their new relationship to show up to feel love, or a mystical experience to feel awe, or to become successful to feel empowered. Well, that's the old model of reality, of cause and effect. You know, waiting for something outside of us to change how we feel inside of us. And when we can correlate the change that we feel inside of us to whatever caused it or whoever caused it outside of us, that event in and of itself is a memory. We begin to become more dependent on that external substance. But the quantum model of reality, this model, is saying we want a cause and effect. So then you have to then begin to feel abundant before the experience actually occurs, and to teach your body emotionally what that future event is going to feel like, to begin to feel love before your relationship, to feel empowered before your success, to feel wholeness before you're healed. And that's the exact ingredient that allows a person then to reach that state where their body is beginning to experience that future reality in the present moment, and they're really turning on new genes for health and the immune system for growth, and turning off the genes that have to do with the stress response and the inflammation.
Oh, my goodness. You are just specifying and confirming everything about the law of attraction. What you are speaking of is the law of attraction.
Yeah, well, it's the principle that you can call it the law of attraction, you can call it the quantum model of reality, but this is where people actually get stuck with the law of attraction, because I have answered thousands of questions about this in seminars and conferences. And people really want to wait for their wealth to show up, and they're frustrated because their wealth hasn't showed up. And I always say to them, well, here's a great example. I was in Los Angeles, and I'm getting ready to start a talk, and this woman comes marching up to me and says, how come I'm not living in Santa Fe, New Mexico? And I just took a look at her, and I said, because the personality who's living in Santa Fe, New Mexico looks nothing like that. The truth is that if you're busy being it, you can't, the moment you start analyzing why it hasn't happened, you just return back to the old self. The new self would never think that way.
That is brilliant. I love how you put that. It's so simplistic the way you said it, and it just makes so much sense. So let's go with the overall health again. And are you saying then that if we have aches and pains in our body, say a lower back ache or a neck ache or something like that, is that a hint as to what is going on emotionally in our body?
Well, I would say that the majority of the time, if there hasn't been some physical trauma, like you haven't been hit by a car, you didn't lift up a huge barrel and put it in the back of your truck, but if you are all of a sudden starting to experience, let's just say neck pain. I mean, I can't tell you how many times people have said to me, oh, I have neck pain, I think I slept wrong. And I say to them, really? Are you sleeping with a new pillow? No. Are you in a new bed? No. Are you sleeping with somebody new? No. Okay, well, what have you been doing for the last 3 months? Well, I filed bankruptcy, digging ditches for a living. My mother's in the hospital with cancer. I'm getting a divorce. Oh, yeah, you slept wrong. Really? Really, if you look at a person's emotional state, now let's talk about what we're talking about here, because I'm talking about the stress hormones of survival.
Right.
When we react to something or someone in our life, stress, by the way, is when your body's knocked out of homeostasis. The stress response is what your body innately does to return itself back to order. So we have different types of stress. We have physical stress like trauma, injuries, accidents. We have chemical stress like viruses and bacteria and heavy metals and food and hangovers and blood sugar levels. And we have emotional stress like traffic jams and internet connections and second mortgages and single parenting and family tragedies, and all of those things knock the brain and body out of balance. Now, all organisms in nature can tolerate short-term stress. Zebra gets chased by the lion. The zebra outruns the lion. 15 minutes later, it goes back to grazing, and the event is over. But when the zebra perceives a threat, that there's a predator, the zebra turns on that fight-or-flight nervous system, and the purpose of that nervous system is to mobilize enormous amounts of energy for some threat in their external environment. If you get cut off on the freeway, you jam on your brakes, that's a stress response. But more than likely, most integrated people, about 30 minutes later, can get back to a balance again. The problem is when we turn on the stress response and we can't turn it off, now the body begins to break down because no organism in nature can tolerate the effects of long-term stress. Right. You can't live in emergency mode for extended period of time, because if you do and you keep mobilizing all of that energy for a threat in your external environment, there's no energy in your internal environment for growth and repair. So then the body begins to break down. So then the problem with human beings is that we can turn on the stress response just by thought alone. We can think about our problems. We could imagine some future worst-case scenario. We can remember some past event. And we can knock our body out of physiological balance just by thinking certain ways. So then when we turn on that effect and the body's living in emergency mode, then it is our own thoughts then that begin to make us sick, because the hormones of stress long-term dysregulate and downregulate genes that create disease. So in the example of someone who has neck pain or back pain, I would suggest to them, if there was no trauma, that more than likely that person is out of balance and they're mobilizing a lot of adrenaline, but there's no predator around the corner. There's no angry tribe that's getting ready to attack. They're actually turning on that response, and their body is believing that there's some type of external threat. And if you keep activating that particular set of chemicals, then the adrenals are putting out liquid energy. And if you're not fighting and you're not running, that liquid energy makes its way into the tissues and hardens tissues. Mm. And really, it causes physical contraction in the body. So I think that the research shows that 9 out of 10 people that walk into a healthcare facility in the Western world walk in there because of a psychological or emotional stress disorder.
Wow. Wow. And when people start feeling the stress, that's when they need to start doing the meditation that's in their book, in your book, to show people how they can get back into harmony.
Yeah, let's talk about that too, because this is kind of a funny thing. The hormones of stress are highly addictive.
Mm.
They're like a triple cappuccino. You know, they're liquid energy that wake the brain and body up short term. So we get a rush of adrenaline and we feel alive. So we begin to associate the problems and conditions in our life to reaffirm our emotional addiction, to remember who we think we are as a somebody, you know, the bad relationship, the bad job, all of that is to reaffirm that emotion so that we can keep feeling something, because God forbid we don't feel anything. So now if you can turn on a stress response by thought alone, and those chemicals are addictive, we become addicted to our own thoughts. So in that situation, we put all of our attention on our external environment. Why? Because there's a predator out there. There's a stress out there, and you got to heighten your senses to pay attention. So then the idea of going within and closing your eyes, for most people who are addicted, it doesn't feel right, because why would you close your eyes? There's something out there that could be potentially dangerous, because that's where your attention is. But if you're able to then dissociate from your external environment, if you're able to get beyond the addictions and habituations of your body and for a moment lose track of time, over and over again we see that people's brains begin to recalibrate and their body moves back to homeostasis. So the inward process then is a retreat from your life long enough to change your internal states and shorten the stress response, and that's called emotional intelligence. And meditation and the work that we do, and even the meditation in the You Are the Placebo, is a great way for people to regulate those states.
You know, what I loved about your book, too, is that you actually give a section that if people want to record it for themselves. I think that was very cool. because it really allows someone to experience what exactly you are saying.
Yeah, I think, if you hear your voice long enough, it becomes the new voice in your head.
It's funny to look at it like that. But that is so important. What is science saying about placebo? Are they still poo-pooing it, or is it now becoming recognized in the medical field?
Well, no, I think most medical physicians will give a certain credence to the placebo response, and I think that they're hopeful about that, because the research shows when a doctor's enthusiastic, for example, about a new medication and she prescribes that medication, patients will respond better. If the doctor has a command of the space and is very confident in what they're doing and they're considered an expert, that person will accept, believe, and surrender to the doctor's expertise without any analysis.
Right.
But when you start looking at pharmaceutical companies, they don't really like the idea of the placebo too much, because they won't publish some of the studies that have to do with the effects of the placebo, because it's almost too much. It makes the drug look not as effective.
That's
so
right.
They lose profits from it. I think it's a real thing at this point. There's double-blind and triple-blind studies now, because the power of the mind is that important. They know the placebo works really well with pain. They know it works well with certain immune-mediated conditions. But I'm pushing the envelope of it, because I think that once you understand the mechanics and you can really teach people how to do it, you can begin to make very significant changes in their health and in their life.
I agree. And if I'm not a big believer in pharmaceuticals, because I see that sometimes the symptoms of a pill is often worse than what they're trying to correct. To me, it would be worthwhile for the pharmaceuticals to go ahead and charge and then make them sugar pills.
Well, as I say in the introduction of my book, I really don't want to get into the ethics behind that, because I'm certain people who don't respond to the placebo would say, I needed the real medication. So it creates a huge, huge liability issue. So it becomes challenging. But here's the key. I mean, this is what I tell people. The important aspect of all of this is not denial. Like, if you're diagnosed with a condition, that doesn't mean you shouldn't look at the fact that you have the condition. You have to look at the condition. You have to get measurements. And then you have to go about your journey in creating, look, if there's three types of stress, physical, chemical, and emotional, then there's three types of balance, physical, chemical, and emotional. And you may have to create a regime for yourself by doing your inward work and changing your internal states. And you may want to, consume less food, for more chemical balance, so more energy goes for growth and repair. You may want to, retreat from your life for a week so you're not reacting to the same people in the same way. You may want to, do some physical exercise to help create more balance. And if you're doing the process, and we have a lot of students that have healed themselves of all kinds of things, but we tell them to be prudent and to be wise. And 3 months later, take a measurement. And if that measurement shows you're getting better, keep doing what you're doing, if it's working. But if the measurement shows you're not getting better, then we got to go back and we got to begin to make some other choices. And that's called science, and it's practical in that way.
Okay, so you're saying it takes the triangle to really bring balance back into your life, and we need to look at all three areas to bring balance in. I love that. I love that. What are some of the things that you've seen that are really amazing about perhaps individual case histories?
Oh, gosh, I can talk for hours about this. I'll tell you a story of a woman that I just came back from Amsterdam, and I was in Barcelona a couple months ago, and I was walking off the stage, and this woman came up to me and handed me an envelope, and we were on a break, and I went into the green room and I read it, and the story goes something like this. This woman is a psychotherapist, and very intelligent lady, and she was living her life, and She has two children, and she was in the shower one Sunday morning, and her husband said goodbye to the children, never said goodbye to her, went to the tallest building in Amsterdam and jumped off the building and committed suicide.
Ooh.
Now, that's a very stressful situation, and the hormones of stress began to turn on, and she was shocked, and she was angry, and she was saddened, and she was victimized, and she was resentful and frustrated. And the refractory period of those hormones, right, the hormones of stress, because every time she thought about the event, she was producing the same chemistry in her brain and body, Jules, as if the event was happening. And the body of the unconscious mind was being programmed into the past because emotions are the record of the past. So over time, the more she talked about it to other people and the more people in her life treated her a certain way, then she was reaffirming a certain personality, a certain identity. And the emotional reaction lasted for hours and days, and it turned into a mood, and then it started lasting for weeks or months, and it turned into a temperament. And now she had one long emotional reaction that was going on from some event that happened, say, 5-6 months ago. The effects of that was producing the stress hormones, and her body was living in emergency mode. And as you know, as we said, no organism can tolerate those type of effects. And the strong chemicals were so addictive that she couldn't think greater than how she felt. In other words, feelings became the means of thinking. And for the most part, if you're thinking equal to how you feel, you can only think in the past. So her mind was wrapped around that event. In a very short amount of time, she developed what the doctors called neuritis, because one morning she woke up and she couldn't move. She couldn't get out of bed. She couldn't move her legs. She couldn't move her waist. She had no movement in her from the waist down.
Wow.
And so they rush her to the hospital. They do all these tests. They can't find anything wrong with her. But for the most part, they call it neuritis, which means you have inflammation of your nerves. But let's think about this. Your body's your unconscious mind, and if you're living by those heightened emotions, of course the body is going to be strained because it's going to believe it's in the past, and it's facing the same conditions 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. The body is reliving the event every single day. So imagine living a suicide or a shocking event like that every single day. The body sooner or later is going to quit. It's going to be in extreme pain. So they don't know how to treat her, so they send her home. And a few months later now, the stress response now is going on for about a year. She starts developing very large lesions, ulcerations in all the mucous membranes of her body, in her mouth, in her esophagus, in her vagina, in her anus, in her bladder, these huge scabs, these huge ulcerations bigger than a quarter. So now she can't eat. Now the stress is getting more because she can't work. She lost her job. Now she has no money. She can't take care of her two children. Her mother's taking care of her and supporting her, and she can't move now. Now she's got all these ulcerations, and now she's in more stress. In a very short amount of time, she develops esophageal cancer. Now the lesions turn into cancer. So now she's got a very serious health condition, and she thinks, you know, that her life is about to end. So she came to a workshop that we had done about a year and a half ago in Holland. And I remember when she showed up, because she was on crutches, and they were bringing her in. And she started to understand the concepts that we were talking about, and she understood that it was her emotions that really, the mismanagement of her emotions that began to really activate the genes in the wrong way that created her diseases. And so she started doing the meditation. She started taking the placebo every day. And she made a deal with herself that she was not going to get up from her meditations until she was in love with life. Now here's the key. The key is she had no reason to be in love with life. She had no job. She lost her husband. She couldn't take care of her kids. She was sick. She had no reason to be in love with life, but she made a deal with herself that she was going to get beyond her emotional body, get beyond her emotional self, and every single day she was going to get up from her meditations or finish her meditation in the state of joy for existence. So she left that event and practiced her meditations, and then she came to a more advanced progressive workshop in New York. She flew in. And that particular group, I pushed them past where they normally would go, because I believe that right on the other side of her anger is joy. Right on the other side of her resentment is freedom. Right on the other side of her fear is really courage. And when we push people beyond that particular state, that's when we do the uncommon. So I pushed this group, and she had a breakthrough in that event, and she actually saw very clearly in her mind, like she had a vision. She didn't create the vision. The vision happened to her. Now, I didn't know this at the time, but she had this vision that she would be standing in front of an audience telling a story about her healing. So she went home, and she continued practicing every single day. She never missed a day for another 9 months or so, or 10 months. Every day, taking the placebo and changing her state of being with a clear intention and an elevated emotion, signaling the gene over and over again. In other words, the amplitude of the event that created the disease, the suicide, was such a strong amplitude of emotion, of energy, that she either had to create an amplitude of energy that was greater than that experience internally, or she had to consistently knock on the genetic door until she finally reprogrammed the gene. So she came to that event in Barcelona, and she was cancer-free.
Wow.
She had no ulcerations any longer in any of her mucous membranes. She had the scope done just a few days before she came. And she had no pain in her body, no neuritis. Of course, she's working again as with a new job doing psychotherapy, of course, from a very different point of view. And she said, and I'm married, and I have a new husband, and I'm in love with him, and my life is so amazing. I'm in love with my life. And I said to her, you get to be in love with your life because every day you created from the place of being in love with your life.
Wow. Wow. How profound.
So that's just one story, but, you know, there's many, many people that have done the same thing.
Give us another story. That is amazing. I love it. That really tells everyone exactly how important the subject is and how important your book is. So give us another case history.
Sure. Here's another one off the top of my head. We had a woman after I did What the Bleep, I did the movie What the Bleep, I was in a retreat center in New York, and I was about ready to do a little workshop. And this woman came and sat at my dinner table as just before I was going to start the event, and she was in a walker. And she was a young woman, you know, probably in her early 30s and, you know, healthy looking. And she kind of confronted me and said, I have a very serious bone disease. And the doctors told me I will never be able to change this, and I'm going to be living like this the rest of my life. And I want to know if you can help me. And I said, well, theoretically, it's possible to turn that around. I said, but listen, genetic conditions that are early onset are a little bit more hardwired than ones that we accumulate later on in life through lifestyle and behaviors, but it's possible. So I showed up at another retreat center in the Bahamas, and there she was again with her walker, and came and listened to me speak. I was speaking in the evenings every night, and she wound up coming to one of our workshops and really started to embrace the concepts. Now, this woman, when she was a child, had an abusive father, and her father was very violent, and he was physically abusive with his children. And so a lot of the children lived in a constant state of vigilance and fear. And when children are young, their brainwave patterns, from a brainwave standpoint, they spend the first 6 years of their life in delta and theta, which means their subconscious mind is completely open to information. So from the age of 6 to 12, our brainwaves are in alpha, and we're in that imaginary world, and we're highly impressionable. So she had some very strong experiences that branded her emotionally, that made her vulnerable, that made her feel weak, that made her feel fear, and for the most part, and to try to control her life. And as she got a little older in her adolescence, she developed a condition called polycystic fibrodysplasia. Now, that's a genetic condition, and what happens in that condition is that the protein scaffolding of the bones tends to break down. Now, cells make proteins. Your body's a protein-producing machine. In order for a cell to make a protein, a gene has to be turned on. So in some way, the wrong gene was switched on that began to create weakness and vulnerability in her bones. And so when she was a teenager, she limped around for a year thinking she had some type of injury, only to find out that her femoral head had been fractured because the protein in the bone was so weak that it couldn't support her body weight. Over the course of the next several years, she had 12 or 17 fractures in that femur.
Wow.
And the doctors told her, look, we have to put a pin in there. She had all these different opinions and some of the greatest surgeons and specialists in New York. They told her that the pin in there would help to stabilize the fractures. But one specialist said, if you put that pin in there, it's going to create stability in the area of the fracture, but the area below is going to break because it's going to just move. So she went for years needing special attention. She needed her own specific care. She walked around either in a walker or a wheelchair or with crutches, and the smallest weight on her leg was enough to fracture her bone. So she tried all types of nutritional therapies. She tried all different types of pharmaceuticals. She even tried to push through it, and of course, none of that worked. And so she started doing the workshops with us, and for a year, she was in the dark night of the soul because she had to really get beyond her identity that was connected to that disease. Of course, if you need special attention and you're a young, attractive woman, it doesn't look like anything's wrong with you. Not a lot of people believe you. And of course, she was always trying to control her reality because of that. Somewhere about a year or so ago, she started to break through. And I started to notice now that she wasn't so frustrated and so angry, that she was kind of a little bit of a skip in her step, and she was interacting with other people. And I saw one day that she was walking with a cane, and then 3 months later she came to another event, and I saw that she wasn't walking with any cane. And so she went to the doctor, and they did an X-ray and a scan of her femur where all those fractures existed. And the first time they did the scan, they said more than 50% of any evidence of ever having a fracture in your leg has been removed. It doesn't even look like you've ever had a fracture in there. Well, that went on, and she went back for another scan, and then, of course, they said, wow, it doesn't look like you've ever had a fracture in your femur. It doesn't look like there's ever been a break in there. Now, she started to signal the new genes, and the body started making new proteins, and she got quite a significant amount of repair in there. And she came to an advanced workshop, Jules, and just before the advanced workshop, she went to her doctor, and the enzyme for the disease was very elevated. So the doctor said, look, the disease is coming back, and you need all these types of therapies, and be careful, and, you know, you're going to get sick again. And she, you know, it was really shocking to her, and she came up to me, and she said, I don't understand how this could possibly be. I thought I was better, and I said, listen, your body lives in the past. It's still got to catch up. Just keep going, keep going, keep going. And it took her a few months to kind of get centered again, but she started again, and she started doing her meditations, and she did it with a lot of passion. And now here's the key element. She reached such a point for herself where she had gotten beyond so many layers of her emotions that were really activated when she was young, way back in deep in the subconscious. She got to a point where she was so happy with herself. She was so whole with who she was. She was so thankful in the state of gratitude, mm-hmm, of her own personal transformation, that she was really happy for no reason, that she didn't even really care if she had the disease any longer. So she went to Mount Sinai Hospital for her blood test and urine test. She walked in there. She was just thankful. She didn't even really care. She peed in the cup. She had her blood drawn. And 2 weeks later, they called her up and said, you are completely normal. There's no evidence of this genetic disease existing for you any longer.
Wow.
Now, if you talk to this woman today, she's beautiful. She's well-adjusted. She has great relationships. She's walking now unencumbered in any way. And I said to her, I said, what have you learned from your disease? Now, if you don't overcome something, of course, it's the It's the burden that you carry. But if you overcome it, then it becomes your greatest teacher. And she said, my disease, that condition, was my greatest teacher. It taught me so much about myself. And there were days that she didn't feel like doing her meditations. There were days that she doubted that she would make a difference. There were days that she felt unworthy, and there were days that she didn't think that she'd ever get any better, but she continued doing it in spite of it. And that then creates this state, what I call self-love. Because when you choose yourself every single day like that enough times, the side effect of that is you begin to break free from the chains of those emotional addictions that keep you anchored to the past. When that occurs, the body settles into the present moment. And when we're whole in the present moment and connected to some future, that's when the event finds us.
Wow. That is so wonderful. I love this. Now, can your body, through your mind, stimulate existing stem cells to get you in a healthier mode or to actually rejuvenate you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Stem cells are just potentials. They're clay. They're waiting to be molded. A stem cell can turn into a muscle cell. It can turn into an immune cell. It can turn into a nerve cell. And it can take on the morphogenesis of that particular cell. It can mutate into that cell to then begin to create healthy balance. We had a person that came to our event in February, and he's battling cancer, and he should have been dead years ago, and he's still continuing on. And he walked in, before he left for his event, he had a blood cell count taken, and his blood cell count, white blood cell count, was zero. And his doctor said to him, do not get on that plane to fly to Phoenix, because if you get an infection, you have no white blood cells to combat that internal infection. Well, he came to the event. He went through 4 days of our training, and he really fell in love with himself and fell in love with his life and really saw possibility. And he walked back into that doctor's office 6 days later, and he had 40,000 white blood cells.
Oh, my goodness.
The doctor just about fell off the chair, and he said, what happened? He said, listen, I moved into an elevated state of being, and I activated stem cells to morph into white blood cells. And in a state of growth and repair, I'm flourishing now, and my body's responding to my mind. Now, what's the doctor going to say to him? No, there's evidence there that he's actually done it, and it was stem cells that began to mutate, waiting for the right instructions, the right instructions to begin to make the proper cells to support growth.
Wow. That is so wonderful. You know, we're almost out of time, but I have thoroughly enjoyed this. Of course, we want everybody to read this book because they're going to get such great insight into being this or to have this elevated state of being. I think this is so important. So we want people to go to your website to get You Are the Placebo, Making Your Mind Matter. And besides that, we actually want to talk about your next workshop. Where is it? When is it?
Well, my next workshop is actually in Switzerland in a few days here. I'm leaving tomorrow for Switzerland. But in the United States, let's see, we're talking May. I will be in I'll be in Toronto at the end of May. I'll be in Colorado in June. I'll be in Miami, Fort Lauderdale in July.
Oh my goodness!
The list goes on. But I think really the best, easiest way for people to get the book, and today is the release date, believe it or not, is on Amazon. Amazon has and we have some free downloads for people if they purchase the book today.
Great. And to get to your site, they just go to drjoedispenza.com. That's drjoedispenza.com. And they can find locations and they can purchase this book. I highly recommend it. And I just can't say enough wonderful things about Dr. Joe. He is such a blessing to this world. What would we do without you?
Well, I hope I'm contributing in some way.
Oh, you are. It's just wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Joe, for coming on our show today.
Thank you, honey, and keep doing the great work that you're doing.
Thank you. Oh, my goodness, wasn't that a wonderful show? Really thought-provoking, isn't it? It's amazing the power of our mind. Please don't forget how incredibly magnificent you are, how powerful you are. Don't let anybody say anything different. You know the truth. And that's what you came here right now on this planet right now to learn. You are powerful and you are the only one that can create your reality. Wow. So I look forward to talking with you again next week. Have a great one. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another great show from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send an email to Jules@LOARadionetwork.com and have a great week.